T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
How about it? It's a beautiful Wednesday, March 20th, 2024. Welcome in to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman Gabe Kuhn on X at GM_Kuhn71. I'm alongside, not the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show, but he is our fearless leader anyway, here at 92.9 ESPN. Brad Carson is in producing
the show. Please hold your applause.
He's on X.
Hold your applause. Hold your applause,
well,
everybody.
You control the applause. That's you've already given yourself plan. Two rounds of
Might
applause.
As well give it a third, Gabe.
Give it a third.
It's one of the great things about hitting the buttons.
Give it a third.
Do a third.
There we go. Shout out, Brad. Appreciate you being here.
Glad to be appreciated. Thank you.
Yes, sir. But how are you doing? You doing well?
Fantastic. Never better.
Good to hear.
A beautiful. Today is the first full day of spring, right? Is that where we're going?
Sure.
Yeah, because like yesterday I heard Jeffrey and Giannotto talking about this. It's like a half day of spring. It's not an official full day of spring. So today is the official full day of spring.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that, but I know that we have 3 hours to talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and
yours
truly.
The hell is he talking about?
We will get into overreaction and not an overreaction in just a moment. We'll talk about what we saw in the first four last night. Virginia should be ashamed of themselves for what they did last night at about 8:40. 67-42, they lost to Colorado State. We know the Mountain West stinks in the tournament, but
whoa!
Virginia made
not
it look,
this year, Gabe.
Maybe not this year. San Diego State, though, historically is the only one that gets through. But Virginia made them look like they are poised for a run, Colorado State. 14 points at half. How about that? My gosh. But also, we're going to talk about Tiger recruiting and you know, the Tiger basketball team headed into next year. Is David Jones going to return? There's a lot of things on the table that I'm curious about. And obviously, things will change as soon as we get more information. But right now, we're working with a lack of information because the season ended not too long ago and the transfer portal is open. They're reaching out to a few guys. So we'll see what happens there. We have plenty to talk about with the ACC and Clemson and Florida State. That'll be fun. The NFL rule changes that they're talking about. We're talking about an XFL kickoff. XFL kickoff. We're trying to change the kickoff rules and hip drop tackles. I know you care a whole lot, a whole bunch about that there, Brad. And you have a lot of things
as
to add
you know,
to
I'm
that.
A tackling expert.
Yes,
tackling
know.
Dummy.
Yes, I get you there. We'll have some NFL news along the way, as well as Jerry Jeudy gets an extension with the Browns after being traded this offseason. As far as guests are concerned, we're absolutely loaded. Mm. Jeff Calkins at 5 o'clock from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show. 5:30, it's a Wednesday. And through the showboat season, we're going to have a showboat member every single week on Wednesday at 5:30 or so.
Nice.
Last week we had Darius Victor. Have you heard Darius Victor's
yeah,
story,
I listened. It was great.
He's, I mean
it's sharp,
nuts.
Dude.
Running back. He's 30 years old. He's played in the NFL. He's played in the XFL. He's played in the Canadian Football League. He's played in the USFL. He was Offensive Player of the Year for the New Jersey Generals in the USFL 2 years ago. But he was, I mean, he was on the Ivory Coast as a refugee the first 5 years of his life. But he was phenomenal last week, is the point I'm getting at. This week, though, we're going to get to the head coach. Head coach John DeFilippo. He is along.
He's good.
They're going through camp. He was obviously there with the Eagles when Nick Foles led them to a Super Bowl.
When you last spoke with him, we were having an ice storm, and he was the only person flying in or out of Memphis Airport.
Yes, and he was going to get some dinner. I think this was his first stop here in Memphis that Just about ever taken, I think. But we've had him on before, but we'll talk to him here at about 5:30. 6 o'clock, Kyron Samuels will join. And you've heard Kyron before from Defiant Takes. He now has he's working the pulling guard. It's him. He's running the pulling guard. And he writes And he was a pulling guard, just to be clear. He was a pulling guard at Jacksonville State and also in the Arena Football League. Had a tryout in the NFL. Very similar story to me, except he went to the Arena Football League and I came to sit in this chair. Oh. That's the difference between me and him. But he will join at 6 o'clock. The Blitz will be at 6:30. I've laid out the show for you. So let's do what we do to start every single Wednesday. That's Overreaction, Not an Overreaction.
Now, it's Overreaction or Not an Overreaction.
We are to watch.
That's crazy.
Chill, homie.
On the Gabe Cujo from 92.9.
One of my favorite days, Wednesday, when you do Overreaction, Not an Overreaction. So we start with Penny and the Tigers. We are still not over the fact that we missed the NCAA tournament. Penny and his staff now have already hit the ground running, and their work is sort of cut out for them on the transfer portal. The only guarantees, seemingly, Gabe, to return that we've looked at are Nick Jourdain and Ashton Hardaway. They have been in contact with several transfers, them being the staff, a few at point guard, and some others as we've read the reports. Obviously, this is a David Jones-based question I'm about to hit you with, overreaction or not overreaction, but the Tigers' leading scorer next year will be a first-year transfer. Overreaction or not an overreaction?
I've gone back and forth, and I think the facts will change, and opinions may change along the way, because we're going to have to see how he's going to get paid and what happens. I'm going to go overreaction, though. I think David Jones, ultimately, his best decision would probably be to return to the University of Memphis. And also on top of that, I think it's better for Penny to get David Jones back so you're getting some more continuity. I talked about this stat earlier this week, but KenPom does this metric, and it has to do with your personnel. And the metric is minutes continuity. As you can imagine, just based on the lineups that get run out there consistently and the amount of guys that were transfers and, you know, Naquan Tomlin 11 games in the season, you'd imagine it'd be low. But out of 363 teams, they're 341st. If you bring in David Jones and he's playing 35 minutes a game, you can boost up that number. And I think if you boost that number up, you're going to be in a better spot than you were a year ago. Now, you may not have the exact talent that you had this year surrounding him, but I think that may help at least a little bit. If you have lesser talent, they can fall into roles a little bit better. They've been in contact with a bunch of guys and point guards, smaller schools. The biggest school that they're reaching out to right now, a guy in Doug McDaniel, who was on an 8-24 Michigan team. He's a good player, but we'll see how that all plays out. They've reached out to Roger McFarlane recently. He's a guard. He's a big guard, 6'5", 205 pounds, plays good defense, but he's from Southeast Louisiana, 14 points a game, 8 rebounds per game, right around 8 or 9.
Nice.
So he's a guy that they're reaching out to right now. But I think the best way forward would be for Penny to put the full court press on and try to get David Jones back on this team. And ultimately, you asked, the Tigers' leading scorer next year will be a first-year transfer, overreaction and not an overreaction. I think it'll be a second-year transfer in David Jones. Now, the asking price is not going to be small. I'm going to ballpark the number around $750,000 to bring him back here, and I sort of wonder what the collectives are thinking about that. How do they feel about bringing him back, considering he still was a leading scorer, he was an All-American, but it didn't seem that much to make that much of a difference on this year's team. They ended up 22-10, no NIT, you know, no NCAA tournament. But in the end of the day, I think that David Jones, ultimately, his best choice would be to return, because if he goes into the NBA, now, there's some caveats here. I think this is his best chance to try to make an NBA run right now. Mm-hmm. Now, he could come back next year and shoot 40% from three and have similar numbers, and maybe he gets the turnovers down, and maybe he will have a better chance going into next year. But right now, based on what we've seen from him historically, this is the best he's ever shot in a year from three. And that certainly helps at the next level. But he's got to learn how to guard. He's got to do some other things to get into the NBA. If he goes in even this year, where his stock is probably the highest, he's probably going to be a two-way guy, likely undrafted or late second round is sort of where he'd be slated. And I don't know if that's enough to sort of leave, you know, $700,000 on the table at the University of Memphis. I don't know if that'd make a whole lot of sense. He's got to take care of family. He's got to do some things to sort of help them along the way. And I think coming back to Memphis would be his biggest payday. And I think ultimately that may lead him back to the University of Memphis. I think that the University of Memphis right now and Penny, they realize they want him back and they're going to put the full court press on. And if I'm David Jones, I sit there and I realize I sort of hold the infinity stones. I hold the leverage here. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to try to go back and forth and see what I can get out of the situation. It's still going to be a lot, but I think the most money he would get is here at the University of Memphis. And ultimately, I think that leads him back to the University of Memphis for one more year.
All right, so you've laid this out nicely. I think for all those reasons, it's 50-50. And I think I said something totally different to you about 30 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Like, I go back and forth on
well,
this.
Well, I mean, it's hard. I mean, we're not that far removed, and we haven't heard him speak.
No.
And we know he's going to test the waters.
Yeah.
So by the time we get into sort of June, July, like, that's when we'll really sort of know his thought process.
So I think what you just said there is exactly why I lean about a percentage point or two more towards not, and here's why. You said he'll test the waters. It's the same. I pulled up Lester Quiñones' Wikipedia because I needed to do a refresher on Quiñones. Totally different player for a lot of reasons. He was a 3-and-D guy, more on the D than the 3, really, if you're talking about Lester and his time at Memphis.
He's sort of the anti-David Jones.
He's really the opposite of David. He's a little shorter. He's about 6'4". David's about 6'6".
And he didn't take a bunch of shots when he was here.
And he wasn't a shot jacker. There really weren't that. I mean, it wasn't a shot jacking team like this one. It's a totally different team. So for those reasons, I realize it's a different player. Having said that, he tested the waters, didn't get drafted, and then signed a deal. And so for that reason, I think when you put carrots in front of these dudes, especially given his family situation, I actually lean a little bit not here.
Well, but here's the issue comparing those two. The situation has changed. The NIL money's a lot bigger.
This is a one-time payment versus a 10-day, a two-week.
No. I get what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. But when Lester had a chance to come back, the NIL collective was not built up like it is
right now. That's fair.
The money that he was going to receive if he came back to the University of Memphis was not going to
be
on the level that David Jones is ultimately going to get. I don't know. I have no idea.
$750,000.
You know why I asked the question if they can afford something like that? And that's just me ballparking and being ridiculous.
I think it's a fair number, actually.
I sort of wonder if they can pay it. I wonder if the donors are willing to fork over that type of money based on what happened this year.
Right. What if he gets injured? There's your $750 in the toilet, it's one dude.
And we'll talk about Caden Proctor a little bit later that went right back to Alabama. He got $100,000 around from Iowa and then went right back to Bama. So some of these things, like the return on investment is not going to be there, but you have to invest to be as good as possible. And I think people behind the scenes understand that. But I don't know if I buy into the David Jones, Lester Quiñones comps. I don't think it's the same situation. I think as players, they're different.
I knew that.
I think where they could be drafted and where they're going to end up is kind of similar. But David Jones, I think, is working at a little bit of a disadvantage because he's going to have to stylistically fit into the NBA as opposed to what Lester did. Lester was defense first. So you know that he's going to give effort on that end, and that's what those guys want to see. They want to see if you're not coming from a preferential spot, they want to see you work hard at all the extra stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When David Jones goes into the NBA, you know what his biggest skill set is? It's scoring. It's scoring.
Right.
And that's not what he's going to be asked to do at that level. So I think he still has things to learn if he wants to get to that level. Mm-hmm. And I think the payday would be bigger here than at the NBA level or at the pro level. Now, I do think there is the caveat here with David Jones. You can't pay him in the United States because he's on a student visa, and you'd probably have to go to the Dominican Republic or overseas to get him his money. But there's ways that they can do that, and they can't get caught. I don't know how that would all work, but if he is going to return, I think there would be a bigger payday here. They're just going to have to jump through some hoops. And I can tell you this, behind the scenes, that staff is working very hard to try to bring him back.
You've convinced me he's not coming back based on all those points.
Okay. Well, I think that it's interesting. But I don't
one-time payment.
But let me be honest, though, Brad, with the point you were making about Lester Quiñones, I don't know. I know everybody's been making this point about Lester. I think the situations are so much different, and time has passed since the Lester Quiñones thing.
So you're saying Lester would have been back if we had an NIL like we do today?
I think it would have been a lot more likely Lester would have returned for one more year if there was an NIL situation set up like what they have right now with Bluff City Collective.
The other argument I would make if I'm an agent and I'm talking to David Jones, which is also happening, is I would tell David Jones, look at Lester Quiñones. He went to Memphis, and he bet on himself, and he has multiple checks coming in, and he's an NBA player.
Well, because the agent wants to get paid the money off that, the...
So you're competing against an agent, too. And I can pay you in America instead of below the table. We're not going to have to go to the Dominican and do a drug deal.
Right. Like, there's a lot of different
things. That's a kid. I'm kidding.
I know what you mean. But there's a lot of different hoops you have to jump through.
There's going to be angles on him that we are not, I think, thinking of. But you make good arguments. I'm listening to you.
The payday, we can both admit.
Big. No, it's a big one-time.
Bigger here.
Yes.
And one fell swoop than it ever will be at the NBA in a year or two.
The other argument, though, the agent might make is, listen, you'll get $200,000, and I'll front you that money.
And then what happens when we can get your contract converted here in 2 years?
Right. You get it converted.
Well, if you play well.
If you play well. And if this doesn't work out, I've also got contacts in Greece and Italy and here. And those jobs pay
but
this.
But let's – like, if I said to you, I can give you a guaranteed $700,000 over a year, or you can get to $1 million per year, but you're going to have to do some really hard work, and it's not guaranteed over a 2 year period. I think a lot of people would lean to the guaranteed money.
Not a drug deal into Dominican.
Yeah,
though.
I know it's different. It's different, but I ultimately think while I'm sitting here right now, I think they're going to try to do everything they can to bring David Jones back, and I think David Jones.
It's good.
May end
I like your
back.
Arguments, though. And like I said, I'm 50-50 on it. I'm sure these are the things that the Memphis staff has got to be talking about, right?
For sure.
Let's go to the NCAA tournament. I was all in on Howard last night. I don't know about you, Gabe.
Seth Towns and
Absolutely.
Year 8.
It was tough. The hoodie look on the sidelines is fun. I like the coaching staff at Howard. Enjoyed what was going on. In that game, it came down to three efforts from the 3-point arc. They lost and missed all three of them. Howard lost that game. In the second game, Virginia got smacked. And this is the second first four game we saw last night. They lost 67-42 to Colorado State, and they had a whopping 14 points in the first half. What a rough first half for Tony Bennett. He has not advanced, of course, in the tournament since that big year in 19 when he won the championship. And with that, the game has passed Tony Bennett by. Is it an overreaction or not an overreaction?
This is a very much for now answer I'm going to give.
Has it passed him by?
I'm going to say overreaction for now.
For now.
Because I still think he's a very good coach.
Okay.
The fact that he's made the tournament three out of the last 4 years with the changing, landscape of college basketball. He's dealing with a Virginia school that's harder with admissions. Mm-hmm. He's also dealing with a Virginia school that may not be the best when it comes to NIL and the expenses they put out for the basketball program every single year as opposed to the other schools in the ACC. We know about Duke and North Carolina and Miami and what they're able to do. I think Virginia's falling behind there. So I want to give him the benefit of the doubt there. But I will say this. And this gives me a chance to sort of talk about good coaches versus great coaches.
I love this. This is a fun conversation.
Good coaches. And I think that Tony Bennett winning a national championship, you sort of have to put him in great by default. But
thank you.
I think there are good coaches that take their scheme and they make the guys, the personnel fit into it no matter what. I think Penny Hardaway tries to do this. Square peg into a round hole certain years. But sometimes you do have the perfect personnel to fit your scheme. And I think there's other coaches. And I think Bill Self fits this. John Calipari at times fits this, where you get your personnel, you get as talented of players as you can, and then you morph your system to fit the players and their skill sets. I think that Tony Bennett falls in that first category right now, where he's taking a bunch of guys, and no matter what, and this has been him his entire career, he's going to make them fit that defensive personality. He's going to make them fit that defensive scheme. And offensively, they have just left everything behind. Like, they have nobody who can play a high level of offense. Reese Beekman's fine, but Reese Beekman's not a guy who should be your leading scorer on a team that you expect to make a run in the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. And there was a time for Tony Bennett where he'd have 3 or 4 year guys. And NIL, at this moment, you're not getting that anymore. The transfer portal, you're not getting that anymore. They see money. And they see ability and chances at other places to go be high-level offensive players and score a lot of points, and they jump at that opportunity. I mean, he had a guy in Caden Shedrick who left this year. Like, I just look at some of the talent he's bringing in. Sure, he's recruiting okay, but he's not able to keep these guys on board and develop them like he once did. I think he has to make some adjustments to how he's going about this, and that's why I say it's an overreaction for now.
Right.
I still think he's a good coach, but he's got to make some adjustments, or this could be the truth. This could be the truth. The game could pass Tony Bennett by if he does not make some serious adjustments to how he's working the transfer portal, to how he's bringing guys in, and if he doesn't ask his NIL collective for more, he's got to make the adjustments to nowadays college athletics, or he may be out of a job here soon, because Virginia expects, absolute elite-level basketball play, and they're not getting that right now. I mean, they should be ashamed of that performance last night, Brad. That was horrible. Like that, and the other part of it, it's not fun to watch. 14 points and a half. They went through a drought from the first half to the second half where they missed 19 consecutive field goals. Like, there just has to, at some point, Tony Bennett has to look into himself and say, the way I've always done things is not going to work in today's day and age. I have to make adjustments. And until he does that, I think you're going to get the same results. But I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. He is a national championship winning coach, and I do respect the job he's done at Virginia. That he, you know, you have to tip the cap to the job he's done at Virginia.
I freaking love Tony Bennett, and this is not going to surprise you or anyone probably listening that Brad Carson loves Tony Bennett in Virginia. I love the way they play.
Really?
I love
you
Isaac.
You like watching that?
I love it. Of course, I grew up in it. You know, I love Isaac McNeely. That is my dog, man. Like, you give me a point guard like Isaac McNeely. I mean, these are the kind of players that I enjoy. I enjoy basketball, though. I also love, you know, system basketball a little bit, you know, because I was bred and raised in it in the Midwest. So you're probably following the tea leaves
right
here. I also think you put here's bottom lining Tony Bennett in our argument, because the question was about Tony Bennett. You put Tony Bennett anywhere and he kills it. I don't care if it's Virginia or whatever.
Let me ask you this. That style of basketball they play, if you're trying to bring in high school recruits and develop them, if you're trying to bring in younger transfer portal recruits and develop them, do you really think that recruits look at that style of basketball and love it? Because I think in the past, like, they love the winning and they love the leadership that the program has. And I'll never deny Tony Bennett's ability as a leader of men for that program. You know, runs into any issues. It's just like on the court, W's and L's is what we judge him by, and that's a good thing, because we follow a program here in Memphis where sometimes off the floor you have to judge it a little harder than on the floor. But I look at his style of play and I just wonder how much longer he's going to be able to recruit the way he is playing that style. And I know we've been having this discussion for going on the last 5 years.
Sure.
But I think we're just getting to a day and age where the transfer portal's so available, NIL money's so available that, you know, we may be leaning out. He may be leaning out of favor with recruits and transfer portal.
Well, Penny proved why the transfer portal is can really be a double-edged sword this year, watching that team. Because what did he do? He went and loaded up on all these dudes that he hadn't developed in his program, and he could not assemble a team out of it. So, I mean, that works both ways.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think his style of basketball does not lend itself to a lot of younger guys wanting to play in it.
If you put Tony Bennett at Memphis with the team that they just had, he'd figure that out.
Really?
I think that's one that would be tougher to figure out. I actually think he's gifted. And he would figure it out.
He's a gifted defensive coach, but offensively,
which is what Memphis needed, really.
I know, but like, do you think that the guys at Memphis would be able to buy into his defensive scheme in a year?
I think he would have thrown out the Renegades, and he would have figured it out with the pieces that he had in front of him.
Okay, I respect him as a coach. I really do.
I think he's
gifted. I just think we're in a different day and age, and he's got to make some adjustments. He really does. Every coach has to make adjustments. Certainly, he does.
I also think Colorado State was seeded poorly. I think Colorado State's a decent team.
Yeah, but
it was a 10-seed matchup last night, you know? I mean, they got destroyed.
But a 25-point loss?
I've seen it all. Memphis beat Virginia this year.
But a 25-point loss, 14
I get it.
Points
no,
and
it's,
half.
It's brutal. It was a bad loss, but, you know, Memphis saw those kind of losses
but
this
also,
year, too.
But also, like, the proof is in the pudding right now, though.
Yep.
Ever since that 2019 year when all those guys graduated and left for the NBA.
I didn't think that was a great team and he won the championship.
Well, I thought it was his most offensively inclined team he ever had.
Yeah.
But, like, we've gotten away from that, and he had to sort of replenish that roster, and since then he hasn't been able to do it. Kihei Clark leaves, and it's like, okay, what else are we doing?
Well, I think Matt Painter these discussions should go towards a coach like Matt Painter. Those are show-me coaches. Like, I think Bennett has done more with less, given the academic standards of Virginia. I don't know if a lot of people are inclined to understand it, but they're pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, they're hard to jump
through. Notre Dame-esque with less scholarships and less money and probably less NIL.
But, Brad, you can admit, based on where they've been and the heights, and maybe he brought these expectations about, right? And like, you do give him credit for that.
Yep.
But the more you keep getting to the NCAA tournament or missing the NCAA tournament, but if you get to the NCAA tournament and you can't advance to a single round of 32, like, that's going to start looking bad on him. And I think that the people at Virginia will have to look at it hard and say, Is it time for a change? Do we need to make a change? Now, I get that the grass is not always greener.
Yeah, I don't think they're firing Tony Bennett.
But I think that at some point, if these results continue to hold year after year, they will start to think about it. And some of your best players are getting in the transfer portal. Caden Shedrick is the one that comes to mind. Like, you just have to start thinking about it that way. I mean, he has done great. But at the end of the day, it's what have you done for me lately? It's always a what have you done for me lately business. And we're going to base you off wins and losses and how far you're getting into the NCAA tournament.
Right.
And that program has gotten proud under him. That program has won a national championship. And they're everything but a national championship contender at this point in Tony Bennett's era, in his tenure. And that has to be a discussion for the higher-ups at Virginia. I don't think there's any question about it. So we'll see. We'll see. But I think it's an overreaction for now because I do think he's a great coach. I do think he's a great coach. He's just got to make some adjustments along the way. Now say goodbye to busted brackets because FanDuel lets you bet on every game of the tourney. Whether you're betting on a big upset or a one seed, it's time to go dancing on America's number one sportsbook. Right now, new customers get $200 in bonus bets if your first $5 bet wins. That's $200 to use on point spreads, money lines. You can even pick who's going to win it all. Just visit FanDuel.com/GabeK. That's G-A-B-E-K. Again, G-A-B-E-K. And bet on college hoops until they cut down the nets. Back rolling on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. A little bit of NCAA tournament news before we head into the first day tomorrow. Kansas is, they're flirting with disaster here. They are absolutely flirting with disaster. We know that Kevin McCullough and Hunter Dickinson were out for their first game in the Big 12 tournament when they played Cincinnati. What happened in that game? They lost by 20 to Cincinnati. Cincinnati ended up losing their next game. But Kansas now, according to Bill Self, is going to be without Kevin McCullough, at least for the first round and maybe for the whole tournament. We'll see what happens. They draw Samford in the first round. Now, Samford is a very, very good mid-major team. Very good 13 seed. That's going to be a very trendy pick for them to go ahead and beat Kansas. But then outside of that, sort of what they're looking at is the winner of Gonzaga and McNeese State if they get through that Samford game. I think they have a decent lucky draw because I don't think Gonzaga is a fourth or five seed. I think they're way overseeded. They got that seed because Mark Few and the success he's had in the past. But I think Kansas is flirting with disaster here, and I would not blame anybody for having them losing in the first round or the round of 32. I still believe, considering the draw they've gotten, they're going to be a Sweet 16 team. But I am not in the slightest going to shame anybody for having them lose to McNeese State in the round of 32, to Gonzaga in the round of 32, because that Kevin McCullough loss, as we saw in the Big 12 tournament, it means a whole lot to that team.
Yeah,
they are not an overly deep team. They run themselves a little bit differently. They have to go to Hunter Dickinson a whole lot, who may be at about, 90, 95%, considering he had to sit out the Big 12 tournament. Kansas is flirting with disaster this year, but I always thought from the beginning, Brad, I don't know how you thought.
Yeah.
I always thought from the beginning this was a weirdly put-together Kansas team on the fly. Yeah, you got Hunter Dickinson, and he was the biggest transfer portal addition of the offseason, but they have not operated by throwing it into the paint a million times a game and going getting their points that way since, Cole Aldrich pre-2010.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I always thought it was going to be bizarre, but without Kevin McCullough, it could be very disastrous for Kansas.
So it looks like Dickinson, I'm looking at the quotes from Self here now, Dickinson's probably going to be okay.
Yeah.
He's practiced, non-contact, looks good, so he's healthy.
But he's healthy, but how healthy? If he had to sit out in the Big 12 tournament, how healthy is he? Because, yeah. I mean, I guess you could make the case that they were doing a full load management with Hunter Dickinson in the Big 12 tournament because they knew that, hey, we're going to be a 3 or 4 seed anyway.
Yeah, I mean, so I think that, I mean, I'm looking at Ken Pom stuff and just trying to size up Samford. That's the first round matchup for Kansas. Samford is Kansas is a 4 seed, which is bizarre to start with. I'm used to seeing Kansas in those top 3 seeds. Samford is 29-5. They're a 13 seed, and they're 82nd in Ken Pom. For reference, South Florida is 81, and Florida State is 83. Yale, who's also in the tournament because they won that miracle game in the Ivy. I don't know if you saw that or not.
Yeah, I saw it.
That was a fun Sunday game. They're kind of in that caliber of team. So I'm just going to go with Bill Self's a genius coach, and he'll figure out how to get through Samford. The second round one is the one I'm more interested in my bracket. I picked Kansas, and then I have McNeese upsetting
McNeese State.
Gonzaga.
They were 30-3 this year. Will Wade has been unreal
He's
so
good.
Far this year. I mean, 19 18-game turnaround is the tied for the biggest turnaround in college basketball history.
Yeah.
I don't blame anybody for doing that. I just think they did get kind of a favor from the committee with who they have to get through. Right.
Yeah, I mean, it is.
Overseeded Gonzaga. I feel okay about Kansas against Gonzaga, even without Kevin McCullough.
Yeah.
And then McNeese, you know, in the end of the day, it's McNeese State, and they're 30-3. They're a Southland team.
I agree with you. I think that Midwest, that whole quadrant, is the weakest, in my view. And, you know, I think a lot of it stems from the fact that the jury is still out on Purdue and Tennessee at the very top of that Midwest bracket, if you were to get that far into the Elite Eight.
But I'm a big Purdue guy this year.
You are on Purdue. You talking about – you actually did a good job the other day talking to Connor about this and sort of laying out, you know –
I mean, my Final Four at this point – you can lay out your Final Four as well. My Final Four, I have UConn, Baylor, Marquette, and Purdue. I have Marquette getting through – UConn getting through, and then UConn winning the national championship. That's what I have at this particular moment.
I have Tennessee, I have Houston, I have Illinois, and I have Arizona.
Well, and the thing about Purdue is last year when they lost to Fairleigh Dickinson, those guards were just so terrible.
Yeah.
They shot 32% from three. They've boosted that up to 40% from three this year. That is going to change a whole lot for them. Now, they could still shoot cold from three, but you still have Zach Edey to lean on. And I just trust their guys a whole lot more than I did a year ago from the prim.
Well, this is going to sound super basketball philosophical-ish, but like, after you lost to a 16 seed, you kind of don't want that to happen again, so they'll get that one.
Hey, we have good results the year after a team loses to a 16 seed, though, right?
Yeah, and
we're one for one. We're one for one.
That's a good point. The other thing is, all 16 seeds aren't built alike. The 500, whatever they are, 17-17 Montana State Bobcats, like, that team is really, really bad from the Big Sky.
I don't think Grambling State's overly talented either.
So both of those teams, out of the SWAC and the Sky.
Well, you say Montana State at 17-17 is not very good. You know who's favored in that game tonight here starting
at 5:40? Is it Montana State?
Montana State by 5 points.
Yeah. I mean, I have a friend who went to school at Montana State, the Bobcats. Shout out to the Bobcats. Like, it'll be fun for those. I actually get into these games. Like, Jason said he has no interest in the first four games. John was sort of into it for his job. But, like, I enjoyed last night. I didn't enjoy Virginia getting their butt kicked. That game was not competitive and not watchable. But, like, it is. I'm sort of a purist in that I can watch a 16-seed game. I'm a weirdo like that.
I just like more than anything, I just like the ambiance. I like how it looks in Dayton.
Yeah, you got the floor. And
I think for me, I agree with you on the 16 seed games, because these are teams that never have ever been able to sniff this type of situation. Like, it's kind of fun to see their players
play. It's kind of entertaining.
I mean, the players are playing balls to the wall.
Like, you saw it last night in that Howard game.
They feel like they have everything to lose and they have a lot to gain, but they are literally out there doing everything they possibly can. I enjoy that part of it.
The Wagner story last night got me, the seven players and the injury problems that they had. That was the storyline about that game. And I just thought the whole thing was entertaining. So, but we started on this kind of going through the brackets. And, you know, I think Kansas, despite the injury, maybe around – I think that second round is going to be tough.
I think Sweet 16 is their peak.
You think two games?
If they get Kevin McCullough back, we can revisit this.
That's fair.
But I think Sweet 16
is their... The draw is good, though, to your point, though. That is it. Because this is not your normal Gonzaga. Like, people are going to see Gonzaga, and they're going to pick them because that's who they are.
That's another reason that I really like the Purdue draw in that Midwest bracket, though. Because Kansas is struggling right now with Kevin McCullough, and even when he's on the floor, they're still not a deep team. Tennessee has lost two games heading into the NCAA tournament. Creighton seemingly falls short a whole lot.
Yep.
I don't know. And then Utah State, TCU, you have a Mountain West team who's pretty
good.
TCU
would be favored even in the nine-seed game.
But TCU is very middle of the pack, Big 12 team.
That's right.
I don't know. I just like Purdue's draw, and I think they're a better team than they were.
It's a good draw for Kansas.
And I have definitely gotten some flack for picking Purdue this year to get through to the Final Four.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So I'm feeling the vibes, though.
Yeah. Also, shout out to Dan Monson, who's going to be playing tomorrow at Long Beach State. He had a little quote today because he got fired. What was it? 8 days ago.
That story is
ran through the Big West.
Yes.
And he's going to be playing in the tournament coming up tomorrow. against Arizona, which is kind of a weaker two seed. But hey, that's beyond the point. But he said that he's in a real life Seinfeld episode right now. He went up to the press, was trying to talk to me. He said, "I don't have to answer any questions that I don't want to answer. I'm fired.
I'm fired.
I'm working for free right now."
Is there any scenario if you were the AD, and they're not going to do this, by the way, otherwise they would have already done it, like where you would have said, you know, maybe we got it wrong, we shouldn't do that, and you just bring him back?
No. You ran through the Big West tournament. I mean, when it comes to tournament play, how many
teams
in the past.
That was a Brad brainstorm, by the way.
How many teams in the past that we've seen get lucky and luck their way through tournaments? Do you remember? Just so we're clear.
Right.
Remember the Patrick Ewing Georgetown team? He was going to get fired. He wins the tournament.
That's
and they kept him
example.
Around.
That's a good
and he
example.
Won how many games the next 2 years?
Right.
Like barely any? I don't think you make a full decision off winning the Big West tournament.
You say that now about Georgetown, a school that fired their coach, right? What if Penny just makes the tournament next year?
Just makes the tournament?
Just makes the tournament in an underwhelming fashion. Tell me what your thoughts are on that opinion.
He's made the tournament. I think that's the new expectation
here. So we're good.
I think you're good.
Everything's great. Just make
clean.
The tournament.
Isn't that wild, though? He talks, and that's what's bothersome about the entire thing and how he was talking before the American Athletic Conference tournament at his radio show. The expectations have gotten higher since he's gotten here. No, they're not. They have not gotten higher. It has become,
make the tournament.
It has become every 3 or 4 years, get to the second weekend. Now it's just make the tournament, and we can talk about it from there.
That's right. And it is hard to...
That's lower expectations.
The expectations are actually lower. It is somewhat hard to make the tournament. I mean, with the NIL and the way you can...
Well, but the other part of this, though, Brad, that's been bothering me about the discussion around the Memphis job and sort of how Memphis operates. Memphis operates with a top 20 budget still
to this day. Yeah, high-end practice facility, NBA arena.
You can't talk about resources and say it's a different job and the expectations should be lower. Maybe that is the case to a certain extent because still some of these higher recruits want to end up at the Kansases and want to end up elsewhere, not at Memphis. But you can still recruit at a high level. You have a good NIL collective. You put a budget out there that rivals a lot of the teams at the top of the sport, a lot of the programs at the top of the sport. In the end of the day, the resources are still there. You have to capitalize on those resources.
Well, and you only have to beat South Florida, Rice, and North Texas.
It's really that simple. Well, really Rice. Really, like this year.
You kind of need to beat Rice.
The swing game was Rice.
That still blows my mind we lost to Rice, who fired their coach.
The swing game was Rice this year. Let that sink in.
Abysmal.
And also, that game, what's really the most bothersome about it, is how badly the first half was botched by Penny and who he ran out there. Yeah. No true point guard. He had Jaquan Walton out there. That's what's most bothersome is it was completely self-inflicted.
Yeah.
If you rolled out the lineup that you rolled out against South Florida to play that game against Rice, they win it running away by 10. But you rolled out a bunch of different random collection of guys. Jonathan Pierre was in there. Then he played 11 guys in 10 guys in 9 minutes, 11 guys in 12 minutes.
I'm now in baseball's mode too because baseball has started. It reminds me of these baseball teams that you're a much better opponent, so you trot out your sixth best starter against this team because you think it's a win. It feels a little bit like that.
Yeah,
we're gonna
and it comes
let's
back
trot
and bites
out our,
you.
Let's trot out some of these other guys to get some run, and then it comes back to zap you because everybody's
Pastor used to say. You know what he said before the Rice game. He said we're gonna roll out guys that care about winning. We're gonna roll out guys. He pulled that.
He probably should have not done that. We need guys that don't care who are good at basketball.
Yeah, I wish that hindsight 2020, but I could have told you in the moment.
Yep.
But hindsight, play the guys that got you to that point in the year, regardless of what you thought about what they were giving you at that particular moment. It's just very frustrating looking back on it. But let's move forward. ACC is in a world of hurt right now. Clemson and Florida State have wagered litigation wars against the ACC for their grant of rights. And they're basically making the claim that the ACC did not ask their permission to do the 2036 grant of rights thing. And they didn't get offered anything else. What's becoming more clear is this is Clemson, and this was yesterday. Clemson's hopping on the Florida State bandwagon and trying to see what they can do to wiggle their way out of the ACC. Everybody's talked about that ironclad grant of rights that the ACC has because it's through 2036. But I wonder how ironclad it is. I wonder how much you're going to have to pay out to get out of it if you're Clemson or Florida State. I think there's a couple of things that I think are true. I think they're going to need more teams. More universities in that conference to jump on board with them. They're going to need North Carolina. They're going to need Virginia. They're going to need other teams that actually want to get out of the ACC to hop on board with them so they can get this ball rolling. But I think it's pretty clear, this is the other truth, why they're trying to do it. You look at the Big Ten and you look at the SEC and you see the monetary gap every year from TV revenue. And Clemson and Florida State realize if they want to be a part of the party, if they want to compete at the highest level of the sport as they have for the past decade or the last 20 years in Florida State's case, you're going to have to get on the same level monetarily from a TV revenue standpoint. You cannot afford to fall behind for 3-4 years because that could be sort of the death of your competition, your competitiveness against the likes of Alabama and LSU and all these teams that are at the top of the SEC. So I understand why they're doing this. I don't know if it's going to work, though. I think we're way too early in the process to understand the full scope of the case that Florida State and Clemson are going to wage against the ACC.
Yeah, this is a really interesting story to me because it's obviously it's all about money. Obviously, I think in their heart of hearts, the academia people would tell you this is ridiculous, right? Even the presidents. But the presidents and the athletic directors realize that the SEC and the Big Ten now have them by the balls because they have so much cash. So if you're Clemson in Florida State and you're not getting, you can't get out of your deal, you're basically doing this all because you know, like,
your athletic budget is just going to fall behind year after year.
As long as money,
as long as they're in the ACC, their athletic budget will continue to fall behind everybody else.
And it's worth paying the attorneys ridiculous amounts of money to try to figure this out.
Correct.
Even if we may think it's bogus, but we've got to figure out how to wiggle out of this. It'd be interesting if you just went to court and you said, listen, the whole industry changed. The TV dollars are in other words, the deal we cut. When we cut this deal back in 2015, is
NIL, transfer, like all these different things we're talking about.
That's really the
amount of money that is getting paid out to the college football playoff and to the SEC and to the Big Ten. It's all changed.
It's sort of like if I'm in the landline phone business and suddenly the cell phone was introduced.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I owned the landline company, and I got to figure out how to get out of this deal with the people who are doing my providers, my equipment to make these phones. I'm like, man, I got to get out of this deal because now these flip phones, they're everywhere.
Yes.
We are so screwed, and nobody's buying the landline. It's kind of like that. So it'd be interesting if you could go to court, and some attorney who's a lot smarter than I am, Calkins, who went to Harvard, could be like, listen, we realize this lawsuit is like not very ironclad, and we signed a bad deal. But get the cell phone's been introduced, and like we got to get out of the landline business.
Everything has changed,
and it's a different industry. We need to do something. What's the lawsuit we're supposed to file to get that done?
Yeah, and here's a fun question I'm going to ask you. Do you have a home phone?
I do not.
Speaking of
and
this,
we've been married.
You're bringing it up.
Stacey and I have been married for 17 years, and in that 17 years, we've never owned a landline.
Really?
In 17 years.
Only my parents, who are of the baby boomers.
My mom and dad have one as well.
They have one.
And
no one calls it.
You know who calls it? My folks in Illinois have it. You know who calls it? Politicians and robocalls.
Yes, I don't hear it ring very often.
It only calls for robocalls.
I think that's a good example because the world has changed.
It's different.
And they're falling behind. I mean, their payout from the ACC is probably a third.
Yes.
If that, of what the SEC, the peak SEC payout
I think the payouts for the SEC this year, and by the way, it's retroactive, so it's like a year behind the way they do the math. So they wait until business 22 is closed, and then that check comes in 23, et cetera, et cetera, and they get it a little like.
And then they're watching.
It's like $75 million.
And they're watching also in front of them where they were in the Power 5 or they thought they were going to be in the Power 4 when this shifted. You're also seeing the college football playoff saying, hey, the payout for the Big Ten and the SEC is going to be higher than y'all's.
Gabe, it's so much
than the ACC and the Big 12. The Big Ten and the SEC will get paid more from the college football playoff than you guys.
I don't think folks realize what SEC programs do for their alums either. And I'm not disparaging you as a Memphis grad. If you're an alum at Arkansas in baseball, for example, and you played baseball at Arkansas, you get full run of their facility. You get basically all of their trainer treatment. You get everything for, like, if you're, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's ridiculous. Like, they're looking for things to spend money on at these programs. It's crazy.
Well, I think that, too, for some of these programs, you have to, if you don't spend the money, you just have to burn the money.
Yeah, it just goes away. Like, it's,
that's why every single like year budget. You see LSU adding something else to their practice
a wing
facility.
Onto the building. You know, that's what they do.
I think the last one I saw from LSU is they turned every single locker that they had in the football facility, they turned every single locker into a fold-out bed. Like,
that's crazy.
Yeah.
Now, if you see some of these locker rooms, it looks like something out of the Ritz-Carlton. And
no,
they have,
nice.
Like, lit. They're backlit. They have an LED TV in every locker. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah. Now, moving on, we do have a Grizzlies game tonight on the road against the Warriors.
Yep.
We're going to pass you off at about 8:30.
Yeah, we don't get to do a direct handoff
tonight.
Yes,
but it'll be
8:30.
Gary Darby is going to take over. 9 o'clock will be Grizzlies versus Warriors tip-off.
Yep.
When it comes to the Grizzlies and what I think about them right now, I think it's got a lot more fun since Desmond Bane's been a part of the fold. And to see him alongside GeeGee Jackson, to see him alongside Vince Williams Jr., those are the reps that matter. I think ultimately by the time we get to the end of the year, I think maybe sit down Desmond Bane and let him rest. Don't risk injury. But for the time being, if you're not going to play him these crazy extended minutes like you did against the Kings because it was overtime, you played him 37 minutes, I think seeing him out there with some of these young guys is actually a overwhelming plus. And I think there's some people that will disagree with me on that and say, oh, well, you can get those reps during practice. I can tell you from being in you know, high-level sports at the University of Memphis, game reps and practice reps are two completely different things. You have to understand when you get on the court under those lights, you have to understand how you're going to play next to these guys and how they perform when the lights are the brightest. So I have enjoyed seeing GeeGee Jackson alongside Desmond Bane. We need Vince Williams Jr. to come back so he can play alongside Desmond Bane, because these are guys that they're going to have to get used to playing alongside if the Grizzlies want to get into this playoff contention, championship contention window.
I think you're still in evaluation mode for the draft too, aren't
you? Of course.
I mean, 100%. You want to evaluate what cards you have in your deck so that, like, and I know everybody thinks we're going to draft a center. In my opinion, given everything I've read about the draft, Gabe, I think you do have to draft for best player.
Well, if you're a top five pick, it's hard for me to sit there and say draft for need.
No, right? I don't think that.
I think you fail a lot
of
those times.
You will fail if you do that. It will be the beat part two.
I do look at some of those centers, though. I do like Donovan Klingon a whole lot. I love Donovan Klingon.
Where is he?
I mean, at UConn. At UConn, of course.
Okay.
He's probably going to be slated, you know, late lottery.
Yeah, they've got him like 10th slotted.
Yeah, late lottery, something like that. I think Kyle Filipowski's a fun one, but he'd be sort of in that 15 to 20 range.
Right. And we're probably in that 7 to 10 range. We're going to be drafting probably 7.
Yeah, I sort of wonder how they go about it. I do think one of the biggest...
Would you draft Dalton Kennect at 7?
I don't know.
I would.
Defensive upside's not quite there, but he can score. I do think that when you look at the rest of the year and what could sway your decision making around the draft, Brandon Clark getting back into the lineup.
Okay.
And they have said sort of next Wednesday against the Lakers is one to circle for that. If Brandon Clark can give you what he gave you pre-injury, or at least something close to that, and I know I'm not betting on that because he's a runner and leaper, and we're talking about an Achilles injury.
Yeah, the pogo stick effect there.
And he's been out for a year. Yeah. That second jump may not be what it once was.
And which is fine.
But getting him back on the floor, seeing what he can do alongside Jaren may sway your decision-making at the top of the draft.
Yep.
Because you may not say, okay, we need a center right now in the draft. You may try to go find one with a mid-level exception or something a little short of that. Find a bargain bin one in free agency. So I Brandon Clark is going to be an interesting one to watch the rest of the year, and I think that's going to be an evaluation for the front office to say,
yeah,
okay, maybe the need at center or the need for a rebounder, dirty work guy is not as high as we thought pre-Brandon Clark injury.
Right.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Now we need to go ahead and get up out of here for the first hour, and second hour is going to be on the way, and we're going to start it with Jeff Calkins, as we do every single day right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.